Friends, today we continue our series, Stories of Old, creeping our way towards the end of it. And I'm going to invite you to help me to welcome Zinnia and Ruth as they're going to help to lead us this morning in this service. So, Zinnia, take it away.
A reading from Exodus 15. When Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen went into the sea, the Lord brought the waters of the sea back over to them. But the Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground. Then Miriam, the prophet, Aaron's sister, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women followed her with timbrels and dancing. Miriam sang to them, "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both horse and driver he has hurled into the sea." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Ooh, that was loud. Thanks be to God. Woo! Fire off. All right. Good morning. My name is Ruth Bell Olson, and I am your teacher this morning, and I could not be more excited. I'm so excited. I don't know where to start. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. This is really loud. Glad you can hear me. My husband, Jeff, and I have been part of this community since before there was a Mars Hill. There was a season when a group of us would gather around our living room, and we would dream about a different kind of church in the world. And 18 and a half years later, look at you! It's astonishing! It's absolutely astonishing. So now that you know who I am, you're probably wondering what I'm wearing. I'll tell you a story. Last April, I was invited to preach at a Good Friday service. And it happened to be at a very formal church in downtown Grand Rapids. And I said, great. They're saying, oh, wonderful. I'd love to do that. And my instructions were to wear the Easter vestments of my tradition. Well, I'm part of Mars Hill, so like jeans? The traditional vestments. So I showed up at the church, and I was handed a robe, a black robe, very formal. And I zipped right into that, and I felt like my dad, who's a judge and has been a judge for over 40 years. And he used to say, when I zip on that robe and I go in the courtroom, we get down to business. And so I thought, ooh, I put on that robe, and I thought, I'm getting down to like some preaching business. And frankly, if you're going to teach here and you're going to spin like a cake topper on this stage with thousands of people looking at you, you can become a little preoccupied with what you're going to wear. And I thought this morning, I don't want to be thinking about what I'm going to wear. I want to be thinking about what I'm going to say. So I reached out to my friend Nuria. She's an Episcopal priest. And I said, yeah, you have any suggestions for me? And she said, well, you can borrow my alb. Alb, that was a new word to me. This is Nuria's alb. And I feel like I'm in clergy scrubs. And I think that's just fine. Because we've got a job to do, right? We're going to talk this morning about a story of old, the theme stories of old. What do these archaic Old Testament stories have to teach us today? Right? Following Jesus today, we've got these old, ancient stories. How do we put that together? So the story of old that I'm going to teach on is the story of Miriam. And a couple of you have asked me what I'm going to preach on, and I said, Miriam. And I either get a like, huh? Or, oh, Miriam, the sister. Well, Miriam is called Miriam the prophet. And what's a prophet? In the simplest definition, a prophet is someone who speaks for God. So Miriam is a sister who speaks for God. And her story is largely found in Exodus. But I hope you have a Bible, because we're going to be in it reading the Bible. It's a story of old. Get a Bible. So her story is largely in Exodus. But we're going to actually begin in Micah. Micah's a prophet about 700 years after the Exodus. And if you open your Bible to Micah 6, we're going to start in verse 3. If you have a subheading like I do in your Bible, It says, chapter 6, the Lord's case against Israel. Dun, dun. So the Israelites are complaining, and they're upset with God. In verse 3, God says, my people, what have I done to you? How have I burdened you? Answer me. Okay. Verse 4, I brought you up out of Egypt and redeemed you from the land of slavery. I sent Moses to lead you, also Aaron and Miriam, right? So, Miriam's a sister who speaks for God and who co-led the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt. So I think it's appropriate that we talk about Miriam, right? So let's go back to Exodus and let's find out a little bit more about Miriam. Miriam, the sister. Ooh, this is low. Let's go over here. Miriam, the sister who speaks for God and co-led the Israelites out of Egypt. Never underestimate a sister, right? Exodus 1, the Israelites oppressed. So let's set the stage. The Israelites are flourishing in Egypt. And God has said to Abraham, I will make your descendants like the stars. You will be blessed. You are my people. They're flourishing in Egypt. And then what happens? A new Pharaoh comes to town. And this Pharaoh sees all these Israelites multiplying and doing well. And he says, they are not of my race. And he had fear of them because of how numerous they were. And he wanted power. So he said, I'm going to take this entire race of people and I'm going to enslave them. Because they are a different race, I'm going to enslave them. Sound familiar? So the Israelites continue to flourish and multiply. God is blessing them. So Pharaoh says, I'm going to lay it on even thicker. I'm going to make their work harder, and I'm going to treat them even more ruthlessly. And the Israelites continue to flourish. And then Pharaoh ups his game and says, not only am I going to enslave you and make your work very hard, I'm going to kill all of your baby boys. So the severity of this and the brutality of this, I hope that's hitting you in a really deep place. Not only am I going to enslave you, and I'm going to enslave you for my economic benefit, because all that forced labor is going to make me rich. Once again, does this sound familiar? So the setting is the baby boys are being murdered, because there are too many of you Israelites, so we're going to murder your baby boys, and we're going to murder them publicly. We're going to drown them in the Nile River. So the river, where everyone can see, and the river's full of predators, we're going to take these precious baby boys and we're going to drown them in the river. This is the setting of Exodus 1. Exodus 2 begins with what? The birth of a Hebrew baby boy. This is like cue the dramatic music, like the Law and Order, dun, dun, right? The baby boys are all being killed, and then here comes a Hebrew baby boy. What is going to happen? Let's begin reading in verse 1 of chapter 2. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. So you have a desperate mother who has a beautiful baby boy. And she says, this one's not going to be drowned in the Nile. What am I going to do? I'm going to place him in the Nile in a basket. Now, interesting, the word Hebrew word for basket is the same word for ark as in Noah's ark. And when God placed Noah and his family and the creatures in that ark, what was God doing? He was placing in that ark the hope of humanity, the hope of creation, right? And so it's interesting that word is used here, that this Jewish mother and this Jewish sister take this precious baby, the hope of the Israelites, right? Set it out into the Nile. Now the baby boys are being drowned in the Nile, and here this family, this mother and this sister have faith. There's a different future for this baby, right? Faith in a different kind of future. And so we see this little girl on the banks of the Nile watching. Can you imagine her heart's thumping in her chest? And here goes her baby brother into this dangerous river. And I would say that Miriam was a steward of hope. She is watching and waiting and hoping that this baby boy survives. But now, placing him in the reeds along the Nile, that's interesting. Is it a coincidence that, let's read in verse 5, then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Now, if Pharaoh has an edict to kill all the baby boys, then the only person who can really make an exception to that is Pharaoh, right? If Pharaoh finds a baby, Hebrew baby boy, that child is dead. Now, there's one little caveat, right? Maybe a woman in Pharaoh's house would have compassion. And so this sister watches this basket floating on the Nile, and do we think maybe she knew that Pharaoh's daughter would be there? There was probably some strategy involved, and the hope and prayer that a woman in the house of Pharaoh would have compassion on this baby, this fine child, right? So what does Miriam do? Verse 7, then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? What a little conniver. I will assert that Miriam took an opportunity. Pharaoh's daughter could have seen her and seen the baby and said, kill them all. Snap of a fingers, they would have been dead. Miriam spoke to power. Didn't she? She saw an opportunity, she had a strategy, and she spoke to power. And what happened? Verse 8. Yes, go, she answered. And the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. So not only is Moses' life spared, he enters into the house of the enemy and is spared there. Fascinating, isn't it? Well, what happens to Miriam? We don't see her for a while. Exodus 3, 4, 5, where we follow kind of what happens to Moses. And what happens to Moses? It's a crazy, crazy tale. He leaves Egypt and he comes back, and God says, you are the deliverer of my people. And Moses is faced with the reality of how horrifically the Israelites are being treated. And God says to Moses, do something about it. And there's a burning bush and a bunch of other things that happened, right? And he says, not me. And God says, yes, you. And why Moses? Who had entree into Pharaoh's home? The only Israelite who did. Moses had favor with Pharaoh. He's in his family, right? Because of the strategic placement of a basket and a daughter who had compassion, Moses has access to Pharaoh. And he confronts Pharaoh, "You cannot treat my people like this." And Pharaoh says, "No." And then there's the, you know, Pharaoh, "Let my people go," right? Again and again and again. And the plagues come, and they get worse and worse. And Pharaoh says, "No, I will not let the Israelites go." And finally, it gets so bad that he says, "Ah, get out of here." And so remember, Moses, Aaron, and Miriam lead the Israelites out of Egypt. But what happens? Do they get very far? And can you imagine as a slave? You're a slave under a superpower, and you're finally free to go. I mean, can you imagine, you know, grabbing the thing, your clothes on your back, and you grab a couple things, and you run. And interestingly enough, Pharaoh has a change of heart. He's dependent on these slaves for his economic power. And he has a, what did I just do? So he sends his army after them. They're running. They are running at full speed. And he sends his chariots and his soldiers, probably one of the most powerful armies in the world at that point. He sends them after them. Can you imagine the fear and the anguish? "We have come all this way, Lord. We're following you. We thought we were going to be free." Oh, but what happens? They get to the Red Sea. And the Israelites are standing there thinking, "We're done for. So much for our freedom. Now we're going to be killed. We're going to be recaptured." In our text for this morning, when Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen went into the sea, the Lord brought the waters of the sea back over them. But the Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground. Then Miriam, the prophet, the sister, she took a timbrel, we would call it a tambourine, in her hand. And all the women followed her with timbrels and dancing, and Miriam sang to them, "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both horse and driver he has hurled into the sea." Miriam watched her brother spared. This whole Exodus journey, the chariots thrown into the sea, and what does she do? She gets out a tambourine, and I say, "Get down on it, Miriam. It's time to party. Something amazing happened. Let's celebrate. Let God be exalted." And I'm telling you this morning, Miriam's song is our song, right? When God sent Jesus, the ultimate horse and chariot were thrown into the sea. Bondage and oppression and slavery and all of the horrific things about the human condition are thrown into the sea, and we are free. Doesn't that make you want to grab a tambourine? Right? May God be exalted. Miriam's story is our story. So I'm going to make a couple points about that. What does it mean for us today as Jesus followers in 2017 in Grand Rapids, Michigan? I'm going to make 2 points. There are lots of points we could make, but I'm going to make 2. And the first one is, women are important to God. Woo! Miriam, the prophet who spoke for God, is not the only one. We have Miriam and Deborah and Huldah in the New Testament. We've got Anna in the book of Luke, and we've got Philip's 4 daughters in the book of Acts. Women are prophets and have been and will be and are today. And are we listening? And women are leaders and teachers and healers and so important to the work of God. And Jesus loved women. All throughout the Gospels, you see Jesus saying to women, "Come, you have a place with me." And when that tomb was rolled away, and the resurrection story was new for the first time, who did Jesus first tell? A woman. So women, this is our story to tell. But Women, over the course of history, have been abused, neglected, maligned, oppressed, told lies about themselves again and again and again. I was in Eastern Congo last year, sitting with women and hearing their stories, and Congo has been dubbed the worst place in the world to be a woman. And I can tell you, oppression and bondage are real. And for many of you here this morning, your gender has caused you a great deal of suffering. And whether you carry a briefcase, you hold a baby, or you rock a tambourine, you have a story to tell, and you are important to God. And the challenge for us, I think, is, are we listening and are we aware? And I'll tell you, I was at a Christian university a couple months ago, and a speaker made a commitment that for the next year, this person would not read any books written by white men. And I thought, whew, that's a challenge. Because let's be honest, the Bible translation you hold, most of the ones on your shelf, were translated by men. And you go into the bookstore, and you go to the religion section, you go to the Christianity section, you go to the theology section, the people writing about God, and most of the published titles are by men. And I do not, hear my heart, I do not say that to denigrate any of the men who have done amazing things for the Lord. But what about all those other voices? Right? Are we missing something when we get the perspective of one demographic? That demographic is important. But are we missing something? And not just women, I think people who understand oppression are going to understand the Exodus far better than I am. And I need that perspective because God is a diversity-loving God, right? The creative God knows no bounds. And when I hear other perspectives, I see God more clearly. So if I only have one demographic representing my understanding of God, I am missing something. And I don't know about you, but I am hungry for the big picture of God. And it's like a stripe of a cloth, right? If I hear one voice, and it's one stripe of a cloth, I say, I want the whole blanket. So this is our challenge, right? When you go home and you look at your bookshelf, and you think about the sermons and the podcasts you download and the songs you listen to, are you hearing all those beautiful perspectives on who God is and the nature of God? And if you aren't, maybe you need to look at that. Maybe we all need to look at that, right? Because women are important to God, the marginalized are important to God, and we have a lot to learn. Point number two, I'm going to keep going. Point number two, what we learn about Miriam is God is on the move. And I hope you had a sense in that story of Miriam. There's a girl on the banks of the Nile, and she's watching, right? And she's following this Exodus story and her brothers and the Israelites being freed, and there's this movement and their chariots, and right? There is this momentum. And I think as Christians, do we understand, and like AJ prayed, we are part of a movement. And there are a lot of Christians around us who take the Christian faith as something that I amass. I accumulate the right beliefs, the right doctrine, the right theology, and it's like I build my little barrier, and I'm good, and I spend all my time defending how right I am. And that feels stagnant to me. And we do not serve a stagnant God. God is on the move. And guess what? We get to join in that movement. Yes, And what is that movement, right? It is the redemption, reconciliation, and restoration of all things. The world is broken, and we get to be part of fixing it. We are invited into this movement of love that says there is a different way and a brighter future. And we get to be like Miriam. We get to be stewards of hope, which sometimes means we speak to power, right? And it says that we hold on to the fact that there is a brighter future, and we're going to work toward that future, that God is in control, and I get to join God in that movement. As I've been sitting with this reality and thinking about it, what's happening in our country, Charlottesville, right? Do we live in a broken world? Yes. Do racism, oppression, white supremacy, hatred, misogyny, bigotry, do they all need to be thrown into the sea? Yes. I was sitting with a friend of mine this week, and she said, I watch the news and I weep. And if you don't watch the news and weep, that's something you need to check on. She said, I weep. She said, the hatred just gets at me. And she said, I hate hate. Right? I hate hate. Here's the danger. If we are to be agents of love, because God so loved us, we are to love others and love this broken world. If I am an agent of redemption, reconciliation, restoration, if I am an agent of love, I do not fight fire with fire, right? I do not respond to hate with hate. I fight fire with water. And what is the living water? It is the love of God. What is our instruction? We started in the book of Micah. So let's go back to the book of Micah, chapter 6. What are we to do as agents of love and agents of redemption, reconciliation, and restoration in a broken world and joining this movement of God? We have our instructions. In Micah 6, verse 8, He has shown you all people what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. May we, as the people of Mars Hill, act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. As we prepare to head into the next section of worship this morning, we're going to have communion, we're going to have some more singing. I want to offer you some points of reflection. If you have heard the song of Miriam, the horse and rider has been thrown into the sea, you might be sitting here this morning and you are so excited. You cannot wait to pick up a tambourine because the horse and rider has been thrown into the sea in your life. In the last week, maybe you found out you're cancer-free. Maybe that prodigal child finally came home. Right? We have lots of reasons to celebrate. Maybe you have encountered the living God for the first time and you cannot stand it. You're so excited. And you cannot wait to grab your tambourine and say, that horse and rider's been thrown into the sea. And maybe you came in this morning in a great deal of pain because the world is overwhelming you. You're weeping at the news. You have great trouble in your life, and maybe you have a horse and rider you need to throw into the sea, right? Maybe you came in and it's a broken relationship, it's unforgiveness, it's addiction, I don't know what it is for you, but if you need to do some business with God and you need to throw a horse and rider into the sea, you can here. There are candles in the back if you need to light a candle, if you need to just come forward and kneel and pray, there are people to pray with you. If you want to just take a moment and sit with this reality, you are invited to do so. But may you act justly, love mercy, walk humbly, and know that God is to be exalted. The horse and rider have been thrown into the sea. Amen.
Yeah.